Welcome back to Flick 66. I am Dr. Thomas Parham, Executive Director of Screenwriting here at Azusa Pacific University. Professor Ryan Isay is on assignment this week, and with me, as always, is...
Aaron Linneman. I'm here, not on assignment.
He's our student reviewer, and we have a special guest, returning alumna, Sabrina Robinson, award-winning filmmaker.
As of this morning, yes. Woo!
Tell us about your award.
I won for first-time director in the female category for Campy at the Independent Shorts Awards.
So is that Campy Spy Musical?
That is Campy Spy Musical.
It's a lot of fun.
It is. It's just a good time of a film, and I'm really proud of how it turned out, and so I'm glad it's getting recognition.
Yay, and hopefully that will be the first of many. You guys did enter for the College Television Awards, right?
No.
What?
It's not a television show.
You can still enter... films.
Everybody I'm does. Gonna do it then.
I think the deadline's today. You gotta get on that.
Well, guess so. I know what I'm doing after this.
Okay. Well, great to have you with us, Sabrina. And also, Sabrina just finished her internship with the Television Academy.
Yep. Yesterday I was on Jimmy Kimmel Live, and that was my last day.
Oh, wow. And did you Station 19?
Station 19, The Neighborhood, and then a director named Ed Ornelas, who's done a couple of NCIS episodes and Grey's Anatomy.
Do you know if the Joaquin Phoenix thing was fake?
What Joaquin Phoenix?
Oh,
on Jimmy Kimmel?
Yeah.
That was weird. It was so weird. Joaquin Phoenix was a guest on Jimmy Kimmel, and they like played this clip of him behind the scenes.
Kind of freaking out a little bit.
Kind of freaking out a little bit at the cinematographer.
Uh-huh.
And people thought it was a prank. And I think it's partly on just Joaquin Phoenix's personality, but it was totally...
Yeah, he was mortified.
Or his persona.
Yeah.
So let's recap last weekend's box office. We have Sabrina here. We're going to do a little recap of the Emmy Awards, which were two Sundays ago. But Sabrina was actually there in the truck.
Yeah.
Which is kind of cool.
Yeah.
So we get a peek behind the curtain. Last weekend, Abominable opened at number one from DreamWorks with $39.6 million. Downton Abbey was runner-up with $14.3 million, which brought its week two cum to $58.3. Hustlers made $11.3 million in its third week. It's made $80.5 million on a $20 million budget.
I'm glad it
Ka-ching.
Deserves it.
Here's the thing. I saw that movie... I don't think J-Lo's given a better performance since Out of Sight.
True.
And I wish this writer and director, she should have done Ocean's 8.
Yeah.
Because it had a very Ocean's
type of
feeling.
Did you like Kiki Palmer?
She was great.
Yeah, I loved her.
She was great. I mean, the cast was uniformly great. But it was, I mean, the fact that it's a true story, they're actually getting, well, there was...
Some backlash?
Well, one of the women that's evidently... inspired one of the characters was threatening to sue, and we're like, we optioned the
she's
article.
She's trying to hustle them.
Yeah, yeah.
She's
yeah.
all in the game, baby.
Seriously. But yeah, I highly recommend Hustlers if you haven't seen it. It Chapter 2 was fourth in its fourth week with $10.2 million take, 190.37 domestic cum. And Ad Astra was fifth with $10 million and $35.3 million domestic cum. Have you seen Ad Astra yet?
I'm going to. I had tickets, and then I was like, oh, I have to work on homework. I probably shouldn't go.
How responsible.
Yeah. I was like on my way, and I was filling up with gas, and I was like thinking about it. I was like,
by filling up with gas, your car, not your body, right?
Oh, yeah. My car, yeah.
I really liked it, but people were split. A friend of mine who's a critic hated it and just ripped it
on
his website.
I just heard the ending doesn't really serve the film.
I disagree.
You disagree?
I disagree.
Okay.
And it's got a really interesting spiritual dimension. Somebody, a friend of mine, linked to an article about the theology of Ad Astra, and it's a fascinating...
I know nothing
it's
about
a fa-
it.
It's a fascinating essay. Brad Pitt in space.
Great.
And seriously, it's his movie because you have other characters. Tommy Lee Jones is in mostly in Act 3, but you have other fairly prominent actors in it for just a little bit, and then they're gone.
So is it like The Martian almost?
It's been compared to that, but it's like The Thinking Man's Martian.
I've heard it compared to kind of a, not to the, I mean, nothing's going to compare to this, but I heard it's a little bit like 2001 A Space Odyssey in some ways.
Maybe
pace-wise or...
Oh, pace-wise, yeah, definitely.
Oh, so I'll fall asleep.
It is somewhat deliberately paced, okay. But... It's doing gangbusters overseas, but yeah. not in this country. But
well, it's Brad Pitt.
Brad's having a good year.
Yeah.
New releases opening today. We have Joker, not the Joker. We have Joker. It set a record last night, $13 million on a Thursday evening.
Wow.
So it's tracking toward a $90 million opening, which for an R-rated movie, wow.
I'll be seeing that tonight. So.
We're going to come back and talk about the controversy as one of our feature stories. Lucy in the Sky, which is a fictionalized account of my Naval Academy classmate, Lisa Caputo Nowak. She's the astronaut who was involved in a sordid romantic triangle and that ended her career after she attempted to kidnap her rival. Yeah.
Wow.
But they fictionalized it, changed the names, and enough stuff so they don't get sued.
Yeah.
A lot of my classmates are not happy about the fact that this movie exists. They're wishing it ill. Mm. Natalie Portman plays Lucy in the movie. And then finally, Dolomite Is My Name, which is a comedy biopic about blaxploitation star Rudy Ray Moore, starring Eddie Murphy and also produced by him. The NPR reviewers loved it, so that could be interesting. For news, not as much as in previous weeks, but we'll go through them quickly. On Amazon, Gael Garcia Bernal and Diego Luna are joining the Cortez and Moctezuma series as executive producers. Javier Bardem is attached to star as Cortez. On the CW, Willa Holland, who played Thea Queen on Arrow, is coming back for several episodes season 8. Also, they're developing a spinoff, which will air as one of the 10 final episodes of the season, or of the series, with Katie Cassidy Rogers, a.k.a. Black Siren, Juliana Harkavy, a.k.a. Black Canary, and Catherine McNamara, who plays Mia Queen, or depending on... Basically, she's Oliver and Felicity's daughter. Sometimes they call her Mia Smoke. But it is tentatively titled Canaries, and it'll be set in the future timeline that they've been flashing forward to on Arrow past season. Disney Plus, Dwayne Johnson, Danny Garcia, Brian Volk-Weiss are partnering on a docu-series behind the attraction about the origins of popular Disney attractions and destinations, how they've changed over time, and how fans continue to obsess over them. I bet you're one of those fans, aren't you, Aaron?
I was just back at Disney recently, and I gotta say, my favorite ride of the night was Jungle Cruise. It's the best time I've ever been on Jungle Cruise. We had a great guide. Because that one's hit or miss, because you either have a really bad guide, but this is the best guide we had.
Well, and the movie starring
Dwayne
Johnson and Emily Blunt comes out next year. Freeform has canceled Pretty Little Liars, The Perfectionists.
Yeah, I didn't hear
sad
about it.
No, I didn't even know that existed.
HBO Max has cast Justice Smith and a bunch of other up-and-comers to join Martha Plimpton in their high school show Generations. And Ray Romano and Kristen Milioti, she played the mom on the last season of How I Met Your Mother. Mm. We will say nothing more about that show. They've been cast as the leads in Made for Love, a romantic comedy. And Sesame Street is moving to HBO Max in a 5-season deal.
Woo-hoo.
They really want us to plunk down money for HBO Max.
Man.
Hulu is not moving forward with the Ghost Rider series starring Gabriel Luna, which was not an Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. spinoff, even though Gabriel Luna starred as Ghost Rider in an arc on Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.
Yeah.
But
weird.
Netflix has announced that BoJack Horseman is going to end with season 6.
Split into 2 parts.
Dear White People will end with season 4.
Sad.
Ryan Murphy's series Hollywood has added Jim Parsons and Dylan McDermott to the cast. Stranger Things has officially been renewed for season 4, and the Duffer Brothers have signed a deal with Netflix.
I saw an article recently that said Stranger Things should have ended with season 1, and I heavily disagree.
Well, here's the thing. It's become popular for series or limited series that were based on books to go beyond the book, i.e. 13 Reasons Why, i.e. A Handmaid's Tale, i.e. Big Little Lies.
Mm-hmm.
And the thing is, when the story's done, the story's done.
Yeah.
How many times is Elizabeth Moss going to end an episode by looking maniacally into it, to the screen?
She's got it down to a science, though. Hey, girl's got it going on. I got that she should patent that maniacal look. Showtime has renewed on Becoming a Guide in Central Florida with Kirsten Dunst for season 2. Andrew Scott from Fleabag and Sherlock will star in the Tom Ripley series, and that's based on the Patricia Highsmith book series, starring everyone's favorite psychopath, The Talented Mr. Ripley, which was a movie starring Gwyneth Paltrow, Jude Law, and Matt Damon as the titular psychopath. TBS has given a straight-to-series order to a dramedy from the Cobra Kai team. TNT has renewed Claws for a fourth and final season. And Snowpiercer's series that had moved from TNT to TBS is moving back to TNT. Other news, Apple has set theatrical release plans for The Banker, Hala, and The Elephant Queen. Disney's Cruella has added Killing Eve's Kirby Howe-Baptiste to star opposite Emma Stone. IFC Films has acquired The Painted Bird, an acclaimed but controversial Holocaust drama. Have you heard about this,
people? I heard about this.
People have walked out of the theater when that was showing at festivals and whatnot. That intrigues me. It's like, why are people walking out?
Yeah.
And this is the big news. I'll let Aaron announce this
because we talked about it before the podcast. You know, it just makes your week to hear that Sony and Marvel have come back together with open arms to welcome back Spider-Man into the MCU. And we can thank Tom Holland for that.
Yay! Another reason to love this kid.
Yeah. You
know, Bob Iger was actually on Jimmy Kimmel last night when I was there.
Oh,
and
he was
saying it was Tom, like Tom Holland literally like contacted his assistant.
Yes.
He was like, give me his email. And he was like, you know what? Let's see what this kid has to say. He calls Bob Iger up and it's like,
Mr. Iger.
He was like,
hi, this is Tom Holland.
Yeah.
I play Peter Parker.
Literally. He's like, I need, like, the fans love it. It was like D23 and Tom Holland's like plea to Bob Iger that ultimately made him call the head of Sony and be like, we got to figure this out.
And he used his Uncharted role to
as leverage over Sony.
Yeah. Tom Roth or whatever his name is. It's a great time. July 16th, 2021. Hopefully it will be called Spider-Man Home Alone and take place during Christmas.
No! Now, the rumor mills are swirling.
I like all the jokes that the third movie is going to be called, like, Spider-Man Homeless.
He had joked that on Twitter. There's a rumor swirling that he might be hiring a certain Matt Murdock to defend him. So, which would be interesting.
Saying, there's never been a Spider-Man movie, a live action during Christmas time. And I feel like you got him kind of by himself now with whatever happened at the end of Far From Home. If you haven't seen it, if you have, you know. And you also have the fun of Peter Parker juggling being Spider-Man and the holidays. Like, I feel like that would be a fun movie.
Well, the thing that's interesting about the Matt Murdock rumor is that the deal that Netflix has with Disney / Marvel Studios or Marvel Television with those characters that had their own series is there was a 3-year window. And guess what? In 2 years, that window will be closed.
Mm-hmm.
So they would be free.
Use it or lose it.
They would be free to have, I can't think of the actor's name.
They want him to play him.
Yeah, and D'Onofrio
Charlie
as Kingpin.
Something
Charlie Cox. You could have Charlie Cox and D'Onofrio as, how awesome would that be?
That'd be awesome.
To introduce Kingpin and Daredevil to the real, you know, big screen MCU in the Spider-Man movie, because those characters do interact a lot in the comics. And Kingpin is often a Spider-Man. I mean, Spider-Man's used him as a villain,
In Spider-Verse.
So that could be cool if they can make that. Make it so, Sony! Make it so!
Mm-hmm.
And Disney! Tom Holland, make it happen.
Yeah, exactly.
We know who the real power is. Sony has hired John Wick creator Derek Kolstad, whose wife Sonya is an APU alumna, to adapt A Darker Shade of Magic. Universal has signed Jordan Peele's Monkey Paw to a 5-year exclusive film deal. And Jurassic World 3 will return Sam Neill, Laura Dern, and Jeff Goldblum to the park.
And I hear that it's not like small roles. Like, they'll actually have some decent size roles. Not like the Jeff Goldblum in, what was the last one? Where he had like 2 lines.
Or how about Laura Dern in Jurassic Park 3?
Yeah, with the phone calls.
The phone call. The Endeavor IPO delay sent shockwaves through the agency business. What's happened behind the scenes is, because there had been a lot of other failed tech IPOs and big name IPOs, Endeavor postponed theirs, because the worst thing you want to happen is you have your IPO And then your stock starts trading below what the estimates were. Mm-hmm. Because instead of raising cash, you're going to be hemorrhaging.
That's true.
Really interesting, especially since this agency stuff with the Writers Guild is still ongoing.
Yeah.
So crazy. And then in the About Time category, the long-awaited Big Lebowski spinoff, The Jesus Rolls, starring John Turturro, will have its world premiere at the Rome Film Festival. So I love Lebowski.
Yeah, I do too, but I don't know.
You know,
I don't know if this is going to be good, but I'm excited to see it.
I just showed my history of television class excerpts from Quiz Show, where Turturro plays a Herb Stemple in that. Dude is so good. I mean, he moves from drama to comedy and back effortlessly.
But is it going to be like, in some sense, like the Minion problem where you take the side character and make them the main one and it doesn't work?
Sometimes it can work, and then sometimes you get This Is 40.
Yeah.
Which, the less said about that, the better. Well, let's go ahead into our feature stories, especially inside the Emmy Awards with our special guest, Sabrina Robinson. So, Sabrina, what was that night like? Did you dress up to be in the truck?
So, no. I came with, and I posted on my Instagram about this, and I think they found it funny, but I came in, like, a t-shirt and leggings because it was, like, hot in the truck and there was a lot of people in there. And then I brought my outfit for the governor's ball to change into.
Oh, you got to go to the governor's ball.
I did.
What was that like?
That was fun.
Was the governor there? JK. I know. It's
I
for
think
the governor.
He was, actually.
Oh, seriously?
No. But there was a lot of alcohol. That's all I remember. No,
alcohol at a show business event.
But yeah, it was really fun. And they had, you know, they had the rundown and I was helping a producer by like, I was watching the live feed and I would communicate to her whether or not, or like who won and then whether they had press or not, like a loud press. And so then she would coordinate with every other part.
What do you mean had a loud press?
So some... I don't know. It said, like, no press or, like, press, okay, next to their names.
Seriously?
Yeah. And so, for different categories, too. So, like, for Bill Hader and lead actor, it said, like, press okay. But for director, it said no press, which was really interesting. So I'm not quite sure what that meant, but that was my job, was sitting on the floor next to the producer, telling them if they had press or not. But... And then next to each of the nominees, you know, some of them had like little asterisks and it was who they prepared to win. And so we had a whole package ready to play for behind the scenes about Julia Louis-Dreyfus that we never got to play because
she didn't win.
And it was so, but it, you know, I'm happy for Phoebe
Waller-Bridge.
Yeah, she deserves it, definitely. But it's so interesting how even though you can prepare for something, it's totally like surprising, even still to the people who've been working this for years.
My biggest surprise was that Amazon didn't uncancel Fleabag after it won all those awards.
Yeah.
Just get Jeff Bezos to watch it. What was that show?
The Expanse.
Okay, yeah.
Love that show.
I think, didn't Phoebe Waller-Bridge comment saying that she thinks the story's done and she's okay with it not coming back? I thought it came from her as well.
It could have. Yeah. It could have.
It's always good to stop while you're ahead, too.
Yeah.
I wish more people would. It's like...
I think Marvelous Mrs. Maisel season 3 is coming out and I just finished watching season 2, which is super good. Haven't seen it yet. I would totally see it just because, like, Amy Sherman Palladino is who I want to be. I dressed like her to the governor's ball. Unfortunately, did not see her. I had my top hat. I had my like suit dress thing.
Sabrina cosplays as Amy Sherman Palladino and doesn't run into her.
And doesn't run. I did see Alex Borstein.
That speech Alex Borstein gave was heartrending.
Yeah.
For those of you who didn't watch it. Basically, her grandmother was in a concentration camp as a little girl and was in the line to be shot. And she asked the guard, what happens if I get out of line? And the guard tells her, I don't have the heart to shoot you, but somebody else will. And she got out of line and nobody shot her. And Alex Borstein's advice was, so the moral of the story or words to that effect is, don't be afraid to get out of line.
Yeah.
And plus, she's really good.
Yeah.
She has a bit part in Quiz Show, too. It was funny. It's like, wait a minute. Awesome. All roads lead to Quiz Show. Were there any other things backstage? For example, Jason Bateman, Aaron and I were talking about this before you got
winning
here.
Winning for directing?
He had no idea he was going to win.
No.
Because if you look at the, I mean, it was almost a meme. It's almost a meme. He just sits there, and then Laura Linney's like jumping up and down and rubbing his back, and then he like blinks and turns to his wife, and then he smiles. It's like, so obviously you probably didn't have a package prepared for him.
Oh, no, not at all. It was so surprising. And I think that's really cool to see those genuine surprise reactions, too. Especially with, like, Julie Comer, too, when she won for lead actress for Killing Eve. And that was
Jodie Comer.
Ooh,
she's...
Wasn't she saying in her speech that she didn't invite her parents?
She didn't invite her parents because she thought she wasn't going to win. She's
but, like, I think those
so good.
Genuine reactions are just so... It's what makes the event... like good to watch. But yeah, it's same behind the scenes. We were, especially with Fleabag, we were all, the whole truck was up in a
like woo! In a fit.
Yeah, and Jody with, there were social media girls were in the back, and when Jody won, they like screamed and scared all of us.
That is, have you seen,
I have not, there's so many
Killing
shows
Eve.
In my queue.
Yeah,
I just finished Euphoria.
I've been a lifelong fan of Sandra Oh, but I mean, her co-star is amazing, too.
I was surprised they didn't submit her as supporting, because that's like a trick that people do. It's like, even though we have two strong leads, to seal the deal, we'll put one of them in supporting instead
of lead. You know why they might have done that? Because Game of Thrones only had one submission per for lead, but they had like three each for supporting.
For supporting, oh yeah, yeah,
so
yeah.
So maybe they thought they would have a better chance if they submitted her for lead.
And who won for supporting?
For supporting...
I'm forgetting.
Julia Garner, supporting actress.
For drama. For drama. For Ozark.
Yeah.
For Ozark, right?
And then supporting actress in comedy was Alex Borstein.
Alex Borstein, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's for Family Guy, right?
No.
I'm just kidding.
No.
You're funny.
Yeah.
Waka, waka, waka.
Yeah.
The, did the hostless ceremony aspect work out for did y'all
so.
In the truck feel that worked? It felt kind of aimless.
It was weird. A part of the show that got a lot of attention was the Ken Jeong bit where their like joke went on for too long and no one was laughing. I think it's a hard thing about having so many presenters without any host to kind of guide them.
You need a traffic cop.
Yeah, exactly. Like, at least if you had a host, you could play off of, the presenters could play off of them, and the host could play off of the presenters, and it's kind of a back and forth. I was reading I think it was a Hollywood Reporter, and they said that it was a record low for viewership.
It was a record low for viewership.
But I think every year they don't have a host, it goes down.
I think
so I wonder why they keep doing it.
I think part of the problem, too, it's kind of like with the Oscars, is when so many of the shows are not network shows,
mm-hmm.
when they're streaming or premium cable, or sometimes even basic cable, that people just haven't seen the shows.
Mm-hmm. That was the weirdest Oscar openings in a while. You had that one guy from American Idol like eight years ago sing Queen. And I was like, oh, yeah, this guy exists. And that's what they chose for the opening.
Oh, yeah.
There was the musical number in the Emmys this year that a lot of people were like, what is going on?
Yeah.
I can't remember what it was.
I don't either. It was...
I thought the opening gag where the thing with Anthony Anderson saying, we got to save the... That didn't... Love Anthony Anderson. I didn't think that worked.
Yeah.
It just seemed weird. It felt like...
I did like the stage design. I think I was really impressed. It was super simple. It was just one big screen, but they had three like triangles that
lifted
to reveal.
That was kind of cool.
I liked that.
That was kind of cool. The whole thing with Homer Simpson, you know, he's going to host and then a piano falls on him. I just thought that was... And what did the people in the actual auditorium see?
I wasn't in the auditorium, so I don't know.
You know, so
I have no idea what they're probably what we were seeing.
Huh.
So
probably on the screen.
Stage or a screen with something.
Yeah.
Yeah, I just thought that was.
Yeah, maybe they did no host this year just because we were saying goodbye to so many shows. Like Game of Thrones is ending, Veep is ending. We won't get another season of Fleabag. You know, a lot of these shows that have been with us for so many years are leaving, and I think they wanted to pay tribute to those because they had both of the. They had Game of Thrones cast come on stage.
Yeah. And the Veep cast.
Did they have the Veep? Okay.
Oh, yeah. Because Tony Hale did his shtick with Julia Louis-Dreyfus yeah. after she didn't win the award,
yeah,
which was kind of fun. I just thought it's interesting because almost all the award ceremonies have this issue with the host. But the problem is you've got people like Neil Patrick Harris who are great hosts.
Mm-hmm.
Conan would be a great host. Jimmy Kimmel's been a great host.
Wish list, it's never going to happen.
Say what?
Wish list, it's never going to happen for the Oscars is Billy Crystal one more time.
Oh,
I don't know what it would take to get Billy Crystal back to the Oscars.
I don't know either.
Honorary Oscar?
Yeah, exactly.
JK! In terms of the actual shows winning awards, this is not much of an update from our last show, which was after the first weekend of the Creative Arts Emmys. But at the final tally for Game of Thrones was 12. I hope these are right because I counted them by hand on the internet. Chernobyl with 10, Marvelous Mrs. Maisel with 8, Fleabag with 6, which is very impressive for a show.
And Marvelous Mrs. Maisel and Fleabag are both Amazon, which was really surprising.
Yeah.
It's just a night for Amazon and HBO.
And Game of Thrones and Chernobyl. Now, HBO did regain its Emmy crown from Netflix. I think Netflix edged them out last year.
Mm. Okay, so HBO got it back this year. Now they're out two shows because Chernobyl was limited series and Game of Thrones is over.
Chernobyl 2, Electric Boogaloo. Just kidding.
I think Barry's ending after season 3.
Are you you think they're going to pull the plug?
I heard that it's going to be a little bit for season 3 too. I don't know.
Huh.
Bill Hader has kind of been popping off the last couple months. It's getting bigger.
Oh, you mean like in terms of his film career?
Yeah.
With Chapter 2?
And... yeah, I mean, Barry helped that, but, like, I'm seeing him a lot more in the recent months than I did before. And I've followed him since SNL, so.
Yeah.
Yeah, but he's good. He's really good.
I like his stuff.
From the snubs and surprises, were there anything that we talked a little bit about? Julia Louis-Dreyfus did not win for Veep, as mm-hmm. some people expected. And Jodie Comer won for Killing Eve. I wonder... because Sandra, that show is so interesting because you've got those two strong leads and they do some stuff season one in a show where Sandra Oh is basically a government, basically like an FBI agent assigned overseas, and Jodie Comer is an assassin.
Mm-hmm.
And so the beginning of the series is there are all these mysterious deaths and Sandra Oh has this theory that these aren't disconnected. This is one person and nobody believes her initially until they, you know, more bodies start showing up. But toward the middle of season one, they put the two of them face to face. And usually that's something you'd wait till the season finale. But I love that a lot of the TV shows, especially the dramas, are accelerating plot lines, because instead of stringing things along, it's like boom, episode 3 or 4, you got the two of them facing off. It's like, holy crap.
Yeah,
I think it introduces a whole new dynamic.
Absolutely.
What network is this on?
This is BBC America for us.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
But it's a terrific show. And Jodie Comer's got these crazy eyes.
Oh, yeah.
So she can be charming one more second than, and then she
and
slits,
then like she's gonna
and,
kill you.
And slit somebody's throat the next. It's like, and she and Sandra Oh has such great I'd say chemistry, but
no,
they play off each other so well.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But
I like that. I think TV shows nowadays are less afraid of doing something predictable.
Yeah, like
because that's not necessarily a bad thing anymore. Like your show can be, you can know what's coming and still enjoy what's coming.
It's like mm-hmm. kind of similar. What I've been shocked with Barry is that they are not afraid to take out characters.
Yeah.
Yeah.
One of the snubs, according to Variety, Ava DuVernay was expected to win. She wrote and directed all 4 episodes of When They See Us, and she lost limited series writing and directing to Chernobyl. However, a big surprise, Jarell Jerome, who played the real life Corey Wise in both parts of When They See Us, won for lead actor in a miniseries.
I haven't actually seen When They See Us yet. So I can't talk about the direction or the writing or the performance, really. But there were a lot of people in the truck that were upset about writing and directing. But
did they want Chernobyl to get it?
I think it was split, though. Because, like, half of the truck was like, yay, Chernobyl won. But then the other half was like, oh, but also When They See Us kind of tackled it's hard. Topics that we don't talk about.
It's hard, like, though, because when both are based on historic events, mm-hmm. you know, I haven't seen all of When They See Us either, but sometimes it's hard to gear up to watch something that you know is going to be depressing.
Yeah, I started it. I couldn't. Oh, man. About the time they got arrested, I'm like, I'm not in the mood for this right now.
That's why I've watched most of the shows that were nominated for a comedy series.
Yeah,
and
it's hard.
Almost none of the drama series, just because I'm such a, like, I'm depressed most of the time anyway. So, like, why would I?
I know it's gonna take. Show? Yeah, I know it's gonna take me a minute to start Chernobyl.
Oh yeah.
Well, the thing, I started watching Chernobyl on a plane because they have, you know, a selection of HBO series and whatnot. I figured, why not? Because every friends of mine who do it, I do another podcast with occasionally. I'm an occasional guest on their podcast, but they had recommended Chernobyl and it was terrific. And knowing how the biggest takeaway from Chernobyl is finding out how close we were to a real disaster, because it could have that plant could have exploded, which would have rendered part of the then Soviet Union uninhabitable for, you know, decades, if not centuries. But our heroes prevented that. Of course, the Russian government is, you know, this is all lies and propaganda. It's like, yeah. Remember a few weeks ago when you had an accident on a nuclear sub? Don't believe anything you told us about that, because you have a history of lying to people. But that was great. His speech was great. Mm-hmm. And I was glad that Jerome won.
I'm glad the series got recognition in its nominations, and I'm glad that an actor got recognition through his award, but
definitely.
I haven't seen it.
And we talked about Phoebe Waller-Bridge and Fleabag being big surprise upsets at the expense of Veep.
Yeah, I haven't seen Veep, but I did just start watching Fleabag, and it's really amazing. It's just the lead character that's played by Phoebe Waller-Bridge is just such a new perspective of what women are.
I heard she's unlikable in the beginning.
Oh, she's so unlikable. Yeah. But it makes her charming. Because she, if you don't know this about Fleabag, she, like, addresses the audience, the camera directly.
Breaks the fourth wall.
Yeah, a lot. And so the first kind of, like, introduction to this is longer, and then it's sporadic throughout the rest of the series, but it's so funny. So, like, when she makes a joke, she'll, like, make a face at the camera, and you know whether she's joking or being serious, and I find that really funny into, like, what true human nature is. What we do a lot.
Cool. Snub, Schitt's Creek. Some people expected that to do more. The little Canadian comedy that could. You know, I think that's really a case where it was really just an honor to be nominated, because they were against some heavy hitters, and that was always kind of a dark horse.
Yeah.
We talked about Julia Garner. We talked about Jason Bateman. That was great. I mean, the dude can do it at everything. I mean, he does drama, he does comedy, he does films, he does TV. And he's been doing this since he was a teenager. So I begrudge him nothing. And did we talk about it on the podcast where it really looked like he did not think he was going to win?
Yeah.
That was just amazing. And the fact that people have turned that into a meme is crazy. And then Jesse Armstrong for writing Succession.
Yes, that was a surprise. And in the truck, they think that next season for Succession, I think it has another, is going to be even bigger, because those heavy hitters are now moving out, that Succession's going to get even bigger.
I just was... couple weeks ago, sat next to Alan Rook at In-N-Out.
Alan Rook?
Yeah, with him and his family. Oh, that's too funny. It's the only seat available to his right now.
Did you say anything to him?
No, I actually skipped class to go to a concert. So I thought, what? I thought it was a sign from God that I was sitting next to Ferris Bueller Day Off Star. Yeah, so I was like, I'm okay. It's just one time.
I watched season one of Succession. I didn't like a plot twist / element of the finale, but one of my screenwriting students is trying to convince me to start watching season two. The pitch for the show is fascinating. It's like King Lear, except for he won't abdicate, and the kids are ready for. He basically says, "I'm going to abdicate," and then he won't, and the kids are like, "What the F, Dad?" And so they start making these power plays behind his back, but There are basically no likable characters in the show. I mean, it's almost a matter of who's the least awful. Or, but it's very well, you know, it's got a great cast, but I don't know who I'm supposed to root for because everybody's terrible.
Yeah.
But that seems to be more and more, you know, the whole, we don't just have an anti-hero, we have an anti-cast or whatever you want to call them.
Yeah.
Any other thoughts about the Emmys?
Patricia Arquette was
She's so good. She's so good.
Yeah, I like her performance. I watched her in The Act for a couple of episodes with Joey King, I think. And I watched a reaction video of Joey King, like, hearing that she got nominated for an Emmy, and she started crying. It was great. But Patricia Arquette, I think that went for the limited series or television movie.
I think it's miniseries or telefilm.
Yeah.
Yeah, because they've collapsed some of the categories in recent years. But Arquette's good. This is at least her... Is this her second or third Emmy? And she has and she has an Oscar for Boyhood.
Mm-hmm.
So she's got it going on. I thought dedicating her her reminiscences of Alexis Arquette, her sister, mm-hmm. were very poignant.
Yeah.
And who? Why am I blanking on this? Who won? Dang it. It's flying right out of my mind. Ah, I'm having a junior senior moment. Anyway, one of the coolest things about watching the Emmy Awards is that two of our alums were in a commercial.
Yes.
Did you know about that?
Yes, Google I did. One, yeah. It's been out for a while, but then it got played again during the Emmys. And yeah. So Lauren Myring and Christina Myring.
The Myring were in
a
twins.
Google Nest.
A Google Nest commercial.
Because yes.
I watched the first part live and then had to. Abdicate control of the television to the youngling so he could watch SpongeBob or another cartoon. But as I was catching up, I was fast-forwarding through commercials, and I'm like, I know those faces! Rewind. Oh, it's the Myrings.
That's so exciting. That was very for cool. Them. And they were like posting on their Instagram all day long. I was very happy for them.
Well, let's move on to our other feature story. Joker controversy.
Tell me about this because I haven't heard about this.
Oh, dude, it's crazy.
Yeah, I'm excited to see it tonight. But you know, when people make such a fuss out of it, are you bringing something into light? Is the question.
I think that when you make a big fuss over something, that usually that does not. The controversy lures more people in. Then turns them. I mean, did we learn nothing from the last Temptation of Christ controversy in the late 80s? You know, when Bill Bright of Campus Crusade for Christ offered to buy the negatives from Universal for $10 million to destroy it,
mm-hmm.
you know, and just when something is deemed controversial, I think a lot of people want to see what's got people in a tizzy. With Joker, I think they already had a built-in audience from at least. The Batman movies traditionally have done well for Warners,
mm-hmm.
but this is the odd thing because there is no Batman. It's just Joker. And this isn't even the Joker from the comic books. This isn't even a part of the DC Extended Universe. This is a one-off, kind of like an Elseworlds or Black Label Joker. Those are DC's.
Is it based comics. On a comic?
Not really, no.
Or is it just the filmmaker's imagination?
It's pretty much.
It's Todd Phillips reimagining. Of the Joker.
And there's the controversy is kind of around these mass shooting threats.
Mm, yes, I've heard this.
And the FBI and police.
That they're like banning any Joker costumes.
No costumes. The army put out a warning. FBI did.
The thing is also is the Aurora shooting. They kind of debunked that he wasn't even trying to be the Joker.
Right.
He had no intention of it representing the Joker. His hair was red, but that meant something else. It meant like bravery or something.
But the parents of the Aurora victims wrote a letter to Warners expressing their displeasure. And so when
is the film even being made?
Well, yeah. After the film's been made.
Oh, okay.
I think the NPR reviewers split on it today. One of them loved it, one of them hated it. And the last time I checked Rotten Tomatoes, it had a 69%, which is not fantastic. Although the audience ratings were way high.
93. And it won the Golden...
It won the...
Golden Lion?
Golden Lion at Venice.
Yeah.
And received like a 10-minute standing ovation.
So it's... You know, I'm... I'm interested to see what it is tonight. It's just that some theaters are having, you know, police undercover dressed in, like, metal
that's
detectors.
That's more of a statement on our society than it is on the film. I think art, you shouldn't have restrictions on art.
I mean, here's the key, though. And we talked about this a little bit a few weeks
ago. With
The Hunt.
The Hunt, yeah.
I'm not in favor of censorship, prior restraint. And so to say that you shouldn't make this film or you shouldn't release this film, that's censorship. Now, to edit the film after it's come out or to decide to, oh, we're going to hold this into... I mean, if this was an anniversary of a mass shooting, it might be wise to not release it that weekend.
Yeah.
But the problem is, by definition, censorship is prior restraint. And it's interesting that the critics have been so divided on this.
I just hear that it's very uncomfortable film because of how realistic it can depict and glorify mental illness.
And that was one of the objections of one of the NPR reviewers today, is she felt, Christy Lemire felt that, you know, he's got mental health issues and he becomes a murderer. So you're stereotyping, you know, there are lots of people who murder people who don't have mental health issues. She just thinks it's overall lazy writing. And Todd Phillips kind of added fuel to the fire saying that, oh, there's some, you know, our woke culture has stopped me from making the, you know, raunchy comedies I made, like the Hangover films, etc. It's like, dude, people are still making raunchy comedies. That's on you, not the, you know. Yeah. Dave Chappelle is targeting woke culture on his Netflix specials. Mm-hmm. I mean,
that was you got a stick for it. The best part of his special was the epilogue, the secret epilogue. If you wait the last 3 seconds of the thing in the credits, the last three, it'll be like, hey, do you want to watch this? You can't find it unless you go to the last 3 seconds of his special. And there's like a 20-minute epilogue where he just talks to the audience. It's the best part of the whole thing.
Oh, interesting. Is it about...
He talks about a lot of the woke culture and stuff, and just some fun stories. Eddie Murphy's brother, Charlie Murphy, he talked a lot about Charlie Murphy and, you know, growing up, you know, around stand-ups and stuff and how kind of being a family and stuff. And it was really interesting. It was cool.
I mean, the core is John Fisher, who's a contemporary Christian, he was part of the Jesus movement in the 60s, but he used to write columns for CCM magazine that I read when I was in the Navy on my ship. But he has a great statement: "Sacred cows make great hamburgers," and a lot of comedy has always poked fun at things that you're theoretically not supposed to poke fun at.
Yeah,
I mean I'm Christian, and I think the funniest jokes for me is about Christianity or, you know, Jesus, not in like a malicious way, but, you know, who was the SNL? He was Michael Che made a joke about, you know, like Jesus was a carpenter, you know, when he was on the cross, did he think, you know, this is a really well-made cross, you know, like stuff like that. I find that stuff to be hilarious.
That's serious gallows humor. Or crucifix.
It's a nice cross.
Yeah, I'll be interested to see. I think, Sabrina, didn't you make the comment that that's more on us as a society than the filmmakers?
Yeah, I'm sad that there even is a threat of mass shootings about a movie. That's just sad to me. Like, I don't know, I make comedies. Like, that's where I'm going into. I hope to do direct television comedies, too. I have an optimistic view of the world where I'm like, people I don't think are bad, and when I see things that prove that otherwise, it just makes me sad. And I have to fight against, you know, believing that the world is an awful place when people go into movie theaters and shoot people up. I don't think that's, you know, goes with my optimistic view of the world. But, like, but on the other hand, you know, filmmaking is an art, and censorship is a big deal when it comes to art. And so
absolutely,
there's a balance in terms of the free expression of the artist and the responsibility of your art being consumed by a larger amount of people.
And also your responsibility as a filmmaker to have something
important to say.
Have something exactly important to say. And that's where, I haven't seen it yet. Aaron hasn't seen it yet. Probably by the next time we have, in 2 weeks, we will have, so we can opine
it tonight, yeah.
opine more fully on it. But I know Newsarama is a comic book website. I mean, they cover comic book news, and their reviewer hated it. And it was basically, aside from the liberties taken from the Joker version from the comic book, or the versions of the Joker from the comic book, his big problem was you didn't have anything interesting to say. You just, you know, you just had, you know, thought it would be cool to kind of rip off Scorsese's King of Comedy
in Taxi Driver
with a little bit of Taxi Driver. You have De Niro in it, but at the end of the day, you did not say something new and substantial to shed light on the human condition.
Scorsese actually let his producer work on Joker.
Interesting.
He let her go to work on the film with Todd Phillips.
Huh.
So I think it's beautifully shot. I've heard some of the shots.
I've heard it's beautifully shot.
Even the Jimmy Kimmel thing when he's like freaking out, I was like, dang, that's a nice frame.
Yeah.
That's a really nice frame right
Me
there.
Too. Yeah. Like, this looks really nice.
Yeah.
The laughing clip too. But they're not saying anything new, I think that goes to what Aaron said about it coming off as them glorifying this mental illness. If they're not saying anything new, it could come off as glorification.
What's interesting is no matter what, though, this film only costs $60 million to make, unlike the typical superhero tentpole, which is $150 to $200 for like your Justice Leagues or...
And it's going to make a little... I think it's going to have a second round of heat because people are already talking about Oscars for Joaquin and stuff. So you're going to get more viewership around that time too with DVD purchases and stuff. So definitely. I think it's going to make a lot of money.
Oh, no. It's tracking for a $90 million opening. I don't know if we said that before. But it's going to make a lot of money, which at the end of the day, that's all that Warner Media, owned by an AT&T subsidiary, really cares about. But I don't know. I do plan to see it eventually. It's just not a high priority.
Yeah.
Do you think this will influence future superhero tentpoles to become more
cinematic?
I think for DC.
In terms of like, the cinematography.
Because DC's kind of going the route of the one and dones right now.
DC's... There's no Kevin Feige at DC providing direction for those movies, so right now they're adrift at sea, they're lost. There's rumors that it might be part of Abrams' deal to oversee them. I kind of hope that's not true. There's rumors that I can't think of his name, Gunn, since he's doing The Suicide Squad, the second Suicide movie, that they might be courting him. That would not be a bad thing because he gets comic book movies. But I just think that right now they're just focusing on one movie at a time instead of. I mean, if it's a choice of one movie at a time and forget about how they connect till later, that might not be the worst thing as long as they can make one good movie at a time because they've been failing that test until we got the 1-2 punch of Aquaman and Shazam. Oh, by the way, did you see the Birds of Prey and the fantabulous emancipation of one Harley Quinn?
I can't tell you what I feel about that.
Oh, you don't like it?
I watched it. I don't know if I don't dislike it.
Has the movie come out? Or just the trailer?
Just the trailer. Okay.
But I was like, it wasn't like, heck yeah. You know, it looks like it's something I'm definitely going to see opening weekend.
I'll see it, but man, it just looks... I think
there is no story. I'm a little hesitant just to like doubt it right now because there's only been one trailer.
Right.
So, you know, the first trailer did its job. It's gotten me hyped. It's shown me the best images. It's got a nice color palette
and nice
visual design, which next trailer, I think I'll start judging. If the next trailer I don't see like a nice plot that I can understand, then I'm going to be dubious.
Yeah, it's just, ooh. I mean, the only thing we know plot-wise is that Harley and Joker are no more. Therefore, she's forming a girl group.
Yeah, but like, what is the girl group accomplishing? What's the main
villain? Black Mask is the main villain, but you wouldn't know that because you don't see a Black Mask. You see Ewan McGregor looking like Ewan McGregor. So, I don't know. Very interesting. And Birds of Prey, the comic, has done, I mean, but because of what DC's done with some of the characters in the comic, it's a far cry from what it used to be. Mm-hmm. And it used to not be a Harley Quinn vehicle, but until recently, and because, you know, she really became popular with Suicide Squad, you know, it's like, we've got to put Harley on everything.
There's
an animated series coming to DC Universe soon, and
Harley Quinn one, right?
Yeah, I've heard mixed things about it. I've heard it's TVMA, which is the equivalent of R, and very raunchy, and I don't know. I'm just not a fan of R-rated superhero movies. So, anyway, Sabrina, thanks for joining us and bringing insight.
Yeah, thank you.
Into the Television Academy and being on the scene during the Emmy Awards. And thank you for joining us out there in podcast land. And we'll be back in a couple of weeks to talk about movies and TV.
Bye.
Bye.
Bye.